Hey guys, welcome to 2020 and welcome to the 11th season of Interviews with the Haunting Masters. I want to run something by you. I've been considering now for a couple of seasons to change the name of Interviews with the Haunting Masters. Not the format, not what we do or how we do it, but just change the name to Days in the Wild to match my old TV show and my guide services, Days in the Wild Outfitters, just so it's all concise, and for one. And number two, I got feedback that, you know, over the years that people think my the title of the show is a little pretentious, like, oh, you know, this guy thinks he's a hunting master. And lastly, because Interviews with the Haunting Masters is quite long and a little hard to market, Days in the Wild is a little bit easier. And again, like it's like I said, it matches everything else. So, like to hear what you think. Like to hear from all the fans and all the guys that have been, guys and girls that have been listening to the podcast, and you know, what you think, if I should change the name or not. So I'm gonna put up a little survey page on johnstallone.me, and I'd love to hear back from you. So without further ado, we're gonna roll into this next episode, and it's brought to you by Phoenix Shooting Bags. Thanks. Hi, welcome to the Interviews with the Haunting Masters, brought to you by Phoenix Shooting Bags. Today we are gonna do a little storytelling session. Got my friend Tim Gillingham on the phone, and we're going to hear about his mountain goat. What's going on, man?
How's it going, John?
Oh, it's going. It's going. Stuffing 10 gallons of shit in a 5-gallon hat. I gotta run up to Fishing Game after I get off of this. I got to go pick up a couple leftover javelina tags for a couple clients that are coming in. Got to go get my bow sighted in because the Arizona archery season opens Friday.
Yeah, I kind of wish I was coming.
You're not coming this year?
No. I just got too much going on. It's tournament season. I'm probably out of vacation. I haven't checked. I did a lot. You know, did two weeks on just last week on a mountain goat hunt, and went to Nebraska for 3 or 4 days mule deer hunting. And
I was in Nebraska. I've been wanting to go to Nebraska for a while.
I love it there. You know, I kind of met I went there with a couple of my staff shooters one time several years ago, and they hunted with this guy over there who, I don't know, he's a character, man. He's a little bit of a Bud Light problem, but we have fun. But, nice. They wouldn't think of it as a problem, but he just killed a big buck with a bow. He's killed one every year. I got him a bow and keep him in arrows and broadheads and try to get him to practice more than he does. I haven't been over there for 3 years, and we went over for 3 days and killed 2 nice bucks. But
nice.
You know, it's usually, you know, I've shot 6 bucks over there, and you know, 4 of them are long shots. I won't even go into how far, but you know, I practice all the time so that I can make any shot I can get, because I don't get a lot of time to hunt, you know. And
right,
I'll take a 50 yard shot if I get it, but a lot of people think that's long, you know.
Out
west, that open country, man, you bump one out of a coulee and he stops and looks back, you better be able to kill him, you know.
Nah, I believe
it. It worked out this year, you know. I just went and checked this little finger out, and bumped, you know, just almost went back to the truck. Said, "Nah, I better go check that. They could be bedded behind this one little knob." And sure enough, 2 more steps, and a big old buck blew out of there with 2 does. He stopped, looked back, and I had speed dialed him.
Nice.
Put a thorn broadhead right through him, but it actually wasn't a very good shot, but man, them things are devastating.
Yeah.
They're devastating. I shot my mountain goat with them too, and it's, those who know me know I don't much care for fixed blades, but to each his own.
Yeah.
You know, I just, I just prefer the accuracy, and I trust mechanicals. I think they kill better. You know, dead
Yeah,
is
well, I
dead.
mean, that is that. Yeah, it's true, but that it's
If
got a, it's a
a
bigger,
guy
it's a
makes,
bigger cut.
yeah, if a guy makes a marginal shot, everybody always wants to talk about the marginal shots that hit the shoulder. They don't ever talk about the marginal shot to go the other way, which is a lot of
Right.
them. Yeah.
Most of
And
them. Yeah.
I'd much
Most of
rather
them.
shove a big broadhead, you know, if I accidentally hit one back in the guts or the liver, you know, you get you shove 2 to 2.5 inches through there, chance you catch an artery a lot better, you know.
For sure. So let's hear about this this mountain goat.
Well, most of the times the first week of September, I'm over in Wales and shooting a big tournament over there, and you know, and we have this tag. I don't stay up on it that much like most guys do, but I just keep putting in for points, thinking it's going to take me 20 points to draw anything, and
Right.
because once a lifetime tag, and got to looking, and I could have drawn this tag last year. This archery only tag. It's an August September tag, so I mean their hair's not, you know, what it is in October, but I'm not
No,
sure I
but
want to be in October, to be honest with you.
that's freaking, it could be nasty as fuck up there.
Like you
Especially here.
said,
What is it?
not as good as I once was, but good one. I just don't, you know. I mean, I'll go up and hunt mule deer in the snow and stuff, but it's hard enough to find them things. It's hard enough to find those things in no snow. You know,
Yeah.
you look up on a mountain and you got two mountain goats over an entire range, and you know, sometimes they're just a pinprick up there, you know.
Right.
And I don't want to be on that kind of stuff they're in, and you know, in snow, it's treacherous enough as it is. You know, we went up the first day. Well, anyway, so they canceled these Pro Series tournaments over in Europe, so I decided to put in, and I drew. I had 14 points,
Nice.
and but it's you get to looking at talking to people that have been in there. It's a long ways in where this unit is, you know, and it's really not something you'd want to backpack in, because you know you're looking 10, 12 miles minimum. I got a couple good buddies, and they just, man, they were awesome. They got 11 horses together and packed us in there. Those guys just love cowboying, and they spent most of their time chasing horses that were running away. But we went into, it's a Red Castle Lakes. We were going to
Okay.
come in the other side, but they scouted it the week. They actually rode up in there and scouted it the week before and didn't hardly see anything. So we decided to go in the Red Castle side, where the biologists, you know, always say most of the goats are. But it's steep. I mean, don't get me wrong, it's cliffy stuff, you know. And I talked to
What
guys that,
elevation are they at?
well, we camped at 11.5. The goats are somewhere around 13. So that's probably the hardest thing was for me to deal with, is just, you can't catch your breath ever. You know, it's
No.
like it was rough. I mean, it just sleeping in camp was rough. And you know, they scouted that other, you know, the west side of the unit, or the south side of the unit, a couple weeks before, and just didn't see much at all. And they're pretty spread out. And you know, you know how Google Earth makes everything look way smaller than it actually is. You know,
Right.
you get up in there and you're like, holy crap, dude, that's a long ways over there. You know, it looks like a little hop, skip, and a jump on Google Earth, you
Right.
know. So we packed in, and we get up there the first day, and Sean Greathouse from Hamsky went with me. He's all gung-ho about filming, you know, and he's got all the gear, and I was carrying way too much of it. I mean,
Yeah,
you
no
know,
thanks.
goat country's treacherous, and I don't want to carry anything more than I have to. And so we went up after these goats we saw. We saw a couple of nice goats the first morning up on Red Castle. You know, but one side of that is just a sheer cliff, and you know, the stuff we went up through to get up on them was a little wee bit sketchy. You know, and I've just learned mountain goat hunting. Probably the most important thing mountain goat hunting is you had better strap your bow to your pack, and you just really cannot. You need both hands.
Yeah, you're four buying it all the time.
Yeah, and on the way up, I wasn't really doing that. It was okay, but it was, there was a couple times I probably should have had both hands, but you throw the bow up and climb and throw the bow up and climb. And well, Sean and I get all the way up there, and this big the biggest goat had fed around into these just cliffs. If they shot them, they fall 1,000 feet or more. And
Jeez.
we kind of just there's two nice billies up there, and we were posting up just trying to wait for them to come out in the evening. And we got down too low, and the one that come down below us had come out above us, and we blew that. And we were so whipped by the time we got up there that we just we and we didn't really know how to get off of there, you know what I mean? And we didn't want to go back down the way we came up because going down is way worse than coming up.
Oh, yeah.
And so we made the wise but unwise decision to spend the night without any gear, 13,000 feet.
No way.
Wind was it was brutal, and we just figured if we get up in the morning, we'll be right on top of them. And so we, I had two garbage sacks. He had a Tyvek suit, and I had a space blanket of sorts. We made a little rock shelter that wasn't so sheltered, but that wind blew. I bet it blew 50 miles an hour all night. It
Oh,
never stopped.
I wouldn't
It
doubt it.
was, thank God for Sitka gear. And I lost my gloves, so I didn't have gloves. Thank God I had a beanie. But yeah, it was, we didn't sleep a wink. We became pretty good friends too.
Yeah,
It
it's
was freezing, man. I mean, I don't know, dumb stuff you do.
Yeah,
You can do all
no, thank
kinds of
you. I'll pass, hard pass on that. That's like I hate being in a situation that I'm not prepared for. Like nothing freaking hurts. Nothing
I was
irks
telling
me more than that. Oh
Marlon. I was
man.
telling Marlon Holden that we did that. And he's like, "You're nuts, dude." I was like, "But yeah, I
Yeah.
don't want to go off. I don't want to come off cliffs in the dark. I'm not gonna do that." And so we get
It's
up the
not
next
fun.
morning. We get up the next morning. We're on goats right away. I mean, there's two billies down below us, and I was like, "Yeah, they're not kind of, you're kind of half committed because they weren't great. One was a young billy, and one was, not quite as young." But
Right.
we worked in on them and ended up bumping them over the hill. And where we had watched the bigger billy go the night before, we started working over there. So he's probably over in this basin somewhere. So we get over to the edge of the basin and drop our packs and get ready to just start slipping in. And I can't find my release.
Are you serious?
I'd taken my release off to take a jacket off somewhere, and I lost my release. And turns out that billy was right below us.
Of course he was.
Sean, I went all the way around to the scout mission on the way out, and Sean actually went right straight down and got right on him. So we get to kick back to camp, and we're just flat whipped, just, I mean, whipped, hadn't slept all night, and we get, I can't remember if it was that night we saw, no, it was, those guys had seen some billies up on the face, or one or two, one billy particularly up on the face that was pretty good. And the next morning we wake up, and he's way up in these pinnacles. I'm thinking, I scan, a route up to him, and I said, "I think I can get on him." They all looked at me like I was nuts, And I was like, no, if you go right up here and that, he's like, "No way, man." I said, "I think I can do it." I said, "I just don't know if I have it in me." I just could not muster up the energy. I just got to thinking, I don't think I can do that. They took off to find their horses that had all run away. And we decided we were going to go up to Upper Red Castle Lake maybe go fishing if we saw, we had saw a mountain goat the night before on this cliff face over there. He looked pretty good. And if he got out on that ledge, he fed right across that ledge and there was a really good spot to ambush him. But they're
Okay.
not like white tail deer. They don't do the same thing every day. So,
No.
so we get over there and we try to find him. I saw one billy way up high in the cliffs. And again, it was just like, I get over there and I'm just, it just whipped us just to get over there. I mean, you're going from probably 11.5 up to 12, maybe even 12.5 up to the lake. And I mean, just it just takes everything. And I didn't have any gas, man. So we fished. We just ended up fishing. I just decided there. By the time I ever got up to that stupid thing, he was in a bad spot on a cliff. If I shot him, he's gonna fall probably.
Right.
And I wasn't overly impressed with how big he was. And so we just backed off and fished the rest of the day and recovered. And we get back to camp and those guys were back there. And I'd be damned. We wake up the next morning and they ate three billies down low. It's like the good
Nice.
Lord just put them right in your lap, you know? And that big billy
Nice.
that was up high, he was on a ledge lower than any of them and closer to us. So they all three kind of fed around. One of them went around out of sight. The other one kind of bedded up. And this one, once he got where I knew which he was going in the direction, I took off and headed up the cliff. And I just got up on his level and started working around till I found him. And I got busted. I thought he
Oh.
busted me. I just hunkered down behind a rock and finally he fed out of sight and I just dropped some elevation where he was between, me and another rise and then the adrenaline starts pumping, I get to where I'm about to pop up on him and I've got one of those Ultimate Predator decoys. And if you're going on a goat hunt, I'd highly recommend you get one of these.
Yeah.
It saved the day for me. And goats are curious, but if you give them a little bit more something that's realistic, I think they really key on it. And
Right.
so I put this Ultimate Predator decoy, which is a shoot-through decoy. Danny Ferris owns that company now.
Oh, does he? Okay.
He actually was nice enough to send me one. So I use the mule deer one. I have an antelope one. I have an elk
I
one.
have a mule deer one. I have a
Yeah,
mule
they
deer one.
just.
I've never used the elk one, though.
I just put big Velcro on my limb pockets and just stick it on. But anyway, so I pop that on and I come up over the edge and boom, there he is. It couldn't be any more perfect. I mean, his head's down behind a rock, his whole body's exposed. I'm like scrambling for the rangefinder, 46 yards. By the time I get to full draw, he moves forward. Now his whole
Body's
lower
covered.
chest, well, whole lower chest was covered. But I thought, I can squeak one in there.
Course you can.
Well, of course I can. So I pull back and shoot and hit the rock.
Oh, shit.
I must have glanced it off the top of his back, I think. Just bang. And I'm just like, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me?
Sounds
I
like a
just
John
blew
Stallone
him. I just like literally just threw the decoy at him, just popped it. He just locked up. He was bolting. He just locked up on that decoy and turned around and looked at me kind of. And 51 yards, I zapped one right through him. I thought I'd heart shot him, And he just goes over the knoll and I'm stoked, man. I go over there and I find my arrow. And it's got guts all over it. And I'm just like, what?
Shit.
How did I possibly hit this thing in the guts? I saw where the arrow hit. I mean, just instant blood. Well, turns out when he turned around to look at me, he was kind of curled, So he was actually cord pretty with the his body curled and but that thorn hit him and it must have delivered him, I think, and he didn't make it 30 yards. I just kind of hung tight and waited till Sean was actually filming from down below. And he was filming it 4K from like, wow, he's putting together a video on it, so it should be pretty cool. And of course,
Nice.
I forgot to turn the GoPro on
Oh, yeah.
at the shot. So I gave it a little bit of time and I peeked up over the knob there and he was 19 yards below me and backed up to turn the GoPro on. By the time I got back over, he kicked himself off the ledge. I watched him just slowly fall. And bah, 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 bah. He fell about 300 yards. I'm just looking. I'm looking at his horns. Don't break. Don't break. Don't break. Don't break. He broke about half inch off one tip. But, it was cool. He fell right to the trail. He was only like, shoot. He couldn't have happened any better. He was only 300 yards from the trail.
Really?
That's
awesome.
Oh, yeah.
I was talking to Eddie Claypool. This is going back a couple years now. He waited like 30 years to draw a mountain goat tag. And he finally draws it, and he killed one. And I guess it fell and kept on falling and falling and falling. And he's like, I couldn't do anything with the meat. Both the horns are busted. The cape was all fucked. I was like, he's like, I was so disappointed. He's like, everything I worked so hard, I finally get my chance to go kill one. I kill one with the bow, and it's just, he didn't even mount it.
That was my first one. I shot one in Alaska, and we had went up on a registration hunt and shot this billy at 25 yards with a aluminum arrow and a bear razor head. You know,
nice.
I hit him right in the pocket. And he went over about 85 yards and laid down, and I was stupid enough not to let him lay down and just die there. Dude, he was center punched.
Yeah.
I shot another arrow at him, and he stood up.
And that was
all wobbly. He fell for 30 seconds, bouncing off everything. And I spotted him down there. He is dead. He died right in this curve of this, you know, creek bed. So I get back to camp. My buddy thinks I'm already dead anyway, because it's after dark. And this, because I had taken off after these goats, and he said, I ain't going, dude. So I get back to camp, and I'll be damned. I mean, it was bluebird, right? We got snowed on 12 inches that night in a little bitty freaking backpacker tent. Shit laying everywhere. You know, it's like, you never expected it at all. The closest I ever come to dying was coming off that mountain that morning. I did.
Yeah.
We were letting ourselves down through alders, and I, in our rain gear, and I slipped through my hands, and I flipped around backwards, started tobogganing.
Oh, shit.
Dude, I'm telling you, I could have went 1,000 feet.
Damn.
I lucked out. You look back on your life and you think there's situations like that that somebody's got a plan for you, and it's not that, you know.
Right.
And I fell off of an embankment probably 12 feet, and I landed right in the middle on my back on a big rock.
Jeez. And
the only thing that saved me was my pack. It broke every single pin in my pack. You know, we had the old Cabela Schrader frames with the aluminum pins.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
It literally broke every single one of them.
Huh.
And I smacked my elbow really hard. But we never found that goat.
Oh, really?
We went back, got back up in where he was. I'm sure I was in the right spot. There's wolf tracks through there. There's coyote tracks through there. And this is from the night before.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing. If there was a goat there, they would have found it. They were within 10 yards of it.
Right.
I went in 3 days later, literally climbed completely back up to where I shot him.
Uh-huh.
Made sure, and it wasn't there. But there was a bear on the other hillside when I shot him. Huh. I'm just wondering if that bear heard him fall and come over
possibly
there.
Possibly dragged him off.
Sure, I'm pretty sure that's what happened. But then I shot, I drew a, a register. I drew a tag on the canine. This is the. Then I shot this goat.
Cool.
This is my buddy. My buddy Phil had a. When the first high eight cameras come out.
He had
one. Yeah, he had one, and so I had a tag on the canine. We get up on this nanny, and it's like, dude, it's perfect. It's just like the perfect situation. You'll kill another one. Turned out I never did. So I agree. To go for it, and this goat was 50 yards away and started walking up the ridge, and I I didn't lead him for the up, and I shot him right through the spine.
Oh.
So it's just like the worst video ever, anyway. That
That sucks. Oh, man.
nice thing about it is it died in the grass. There was no real cliffs.
That's good.
But yeah, goat
That's
hunting
good.
is not an old man's game, I can tell you that right now. I'm
I know,
50.
that's what I'm afraid of, man. I'm, you know,
I
I'd
like
like to
to
freaking, I'd like, love to draw a tag before I'm too old to do it. You know, I've
Kodiak,
done sheep, I've done ibex, I've done all, you know, similar type stuff, but you know, I look back at those hunts and I'm like, hell, if it takes me 10 more years to draw a tag, am I gonna be able to freaking do this? I don't know.
that's one of the reasons I put in for that tag. I said, if I go another 5 or 6, 8 years, I hunt mule deer up in the Wasatch here. I mean, we see lots of nice goats. I've been privy. I've been on a couple kills. We helped a guy kill one year. It was 51-inch goat. He was a dandy booner.
Yeah.
How much that goat took? 238 slugs in the chest, and was
Really?
alive for an hour. And was alive for an hour. That was crazy. I'd never seen anything like it. I mean, but you can get around up in that country fairly decent, but it's steep and deep. Steep
Yeah,
and
I
deep.
keep
The hardest
talking.
thing, honestly, is that elevation. I mean, if you're in any type of bad shape, I wouldn't consider going on a mountain goat hunt that was at super high elevation. I would try to go someplace that was,
Nine
maybe
or ten.
Alaska, British Columbia, or something where you're not dealing with, that high elevation where it's super hard to breathe, because that's pretty tough. That's the toughest thing on you. It's just
Altitude sickness and all that other stuff. Hell, I've seen guys come from, you know, East Coast or whatever, and come elk hunting over here at 7,000 to 8,000 feet, and they
really.
get altitude sickness. Yeah, you know. So, I mean, I spend a lot of time at like 10 all the time, you know, every
Well,
year.
if you're like Aaron Snyder and you live up there, I mean, you're like a mountain goat anyway, so I'm afraid I'm going to have a, when you get 50, you're just like every little pain, you're like, I have a heart attack,
Jesus.
every little
Yeah.
gas pain, you're like, is this it? I mean, you just wonder, it's
I
like.
think you gotta, actually, I think the biggest fear of being up at that altitude when you're up is stroke.
Is
When
it?
you're at high altitude. Yeah. Yeah, it's you know, it's easier for you to throw a clot in your brain or some shit and have freaking aneurysm or, yeah.
Don't
No
doubt it,
thanks.
man. We took it pretty, pretty methodical.
Yeah.
Almost.
Well, cool. You got anything else planned for the rest of the year? Well, no.
Oh, no, we're just starting tournament season. I shot a tournament last weekend, got these new Bowtechs rolling, pretty excited about them. This new cam technology they have on these new Bowtechs are pretty phenomenal. And just trying to get the bows to fit me. Hunting wise, no, I'm pretty much done for the year. Next year, I'm not sure what I'm gonna try to do. I may try to do mule deer. I had a guy invite me down to Sonora, actually,
Oh,
to hunt
nice.
mule deer. So I may hit him up on that and maybe try to plan that. I've got a bunch of elk points in Utah here, but it's like, I could get an archery tag in some units, but you waste the time because our season here sucks so bad.
You know,
It's like.
it does. It does. I agree with you that the archery season's not ideal, but I guess it all comes down to if you have the time to do some patterning and stuff like that. They're
But
still
the per
like you can find, say, like Ryan Carter, for instance. I mean, he kills bigger bulls in the archery season than he does in the rifle season because he knows exactly where these what these elk are doing.
And
But
you
you got
where
to spend a shit ton of time. What's that now?
down
Utah?
there
No,
Utah.
in Utah. Yeah, I mean, he hunts the Dutton and, you know, prime
But
units,
it's
but
like do you wait 18 or 14 or 18 years with hopes of getting a unit where you could pull a 370 80 plus, or you just settle for a 330 350.
Yeah.
It's like, it's like I can go hunt someplace else and kill a 330. I mean, maybe not in Idaho anymore. The wolves are killing everything, so frickin',
Yeah.
did you see, I saw something the other day on Facebook that 11 wolves in Yellowstone killed 90 bachelor bulls.
That's nuts.
It's nuts, man. They're trying to put this in Colorado right now. I just think it's it just that kind of, that stuff just irritates the crap out of me. The older I get, the more politics irritate the crap out of me.
Oh yeah, me too.
Because it's all subversive. They're just lying to us behind our back. They all have ulterior motives, and they're trying to destroy hunting and hunters, and
Which is ridiculous because the amount of money that hunting and hunters generate, if that shit goes away, how do
I
they
think it's,
think they're gonna pay for all the stuff that gets paid for?
you call me a conspiracy theorist or whatever, but I think it's bigger than that.
Yeah.
I think they don't want that type of individual in our country, some of the powerful people. They're afraid of them. I got a buddy that's a Delta Force operator, right? He says if he gets within a certain distance of Washington, D.C., he'll get a phone call. They
Really?
want to know why. They want to know why he's there. It's there's a certain they have to know, the elitists in this country have to know the impact or the power of this nation's hunters and the amount of weapons and guns that we own. I
Oh
mean,
yeah.
and they can't do anything, to implement their crazy agendas until that they do something about that or try to do something about that. What's going on in Virginia right now? It's scary, man. It's like it's a who knows?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, it's
I don't think they realize that they
as
once they
well as
wake
come to
up.
shit fast. In my opinion, there's a lot of things I'm not happy about that, you know,
I don't think
I
they understand once they wake the beast what they've done. The average hunter or the average hardworking American isn't going to do it. They're too busy doing other things.
Yeah.
Being productive. And but once you wake them, they're not going to give up their freedom. And we all got to fight for that. I mean, can't be complacent. You can't be uninvolved because you're going to get taken advantage of. I mean, you look what's happened in Colorado now. Colorado. I'd love to move to Colorado, to be honest with you, but man, that place turned into California fast.
It is.
Crazy.
It is.
Crazy. I would never have thought that, and
Right.
such time.
Arizona's still a great state.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I mean, there's plenty of desert there that you can hide bodies,
Listen, you can still carry a rifle across the back of your window and still walk into a store with a sidearm. That's it's
That's
still the
good.
Wild West over here.
Maybe Trump will get concealed carry nationwide
Yeah, maybe.
passed. That'd be awesome.
Yeah. All right, man. Well, before
Oh,
we
we're
go
just
down to
off
sleep.
hey, getting ready for ATA show and doing some videos on stabilization and some different stuff. Got some new products
Nice.
coming out, mainly on the target side of V-Stinger, but I think that's a subject that we're going to spend a lot of time this year trying to educate the bow hunters how to take advantage of stabilization, because I think a lot of bow hunters don't.
Yeah.
Just put a little 6-inch stabilizer on the front of their bow, and they don't realize actually what
That's me.
stabilizer.
It's a handle.
Look at a guy like Levi Morgan, for example. Levi's a top-level competitive shooter. You never see him with a short stabilizer on his hunting bow, right? He always
No.
has usually an 8, 15, or a 20, or a 2-bar system. And that's because he knows the value of it. You're gonna get
Right.
that one shot. You're gonna spend all that time and all that effort climbing up that mountain and doing all this thing, and that adrenaline's pumping and you're jacked, and nothing is gonna help you a stabilizer at the moment of the truth. And, you know, there's just kind of this give and take scenario. Do I want to pack it? How far am I packing it? What am I willing to pack?
Right, right. That's always been my thing. I can't stand weight. I hate weight. I hate weight on my bow. I hate weight on my pack. I hate weight. Just carrying extra weight. They call me a lazy motherfucker or whatever, but I just can't stand carrying extra weight.
It's one thing, you know, it's one thing if you're hunting, you know, say mule deer on a backpack trip, but then again, I watch these guys in videos and stuff miss all the time. It's like, do you know how hard it is to shoot? I did have a bow at one time that I shot without a stabilizer or switchback, but it was a 9.5-inch brace sight. And that's why you could shoot it. But most of these hunting bows are high let off, low brace sights. They're very difficult to shoot already. And without stabilizers, without stabilizers in the back of your yard, they're not that easy. And then you get all jacked up in the field with clothing on and, you know, and stuff happening right now. It's real easy to make a crappy shot, and especially if you're fixed blades, because that crappy shot's going to translate into a really crappy arrow flight.
So yeah,
all that stuff, you know, goes
it's
into
funny. The it's funny you bring it up to stabilizers, because yesterday I went and sighted in my 70 and 80 yard pin, and my new bow, I still haven't put a stabilizer on it yet. I don't know. I just hadn't gotten around to it because I didn't want to use the same one that I had been using. I was considering going a little bit bigger or doing something else. And I was when I sighted in, 20 to 60, I just kept screwing the one that was on my Vertix off and putting it on the VXR. And I forgot to take it with me, so I'm like, fuck it, I don't have a stabilizer, I'll be fine, I'll shoot it. And I got the 70 sighted in with two arrows, and then I shot another four to verify that it wasn't just whatever. Perfect. Same thing with the 80. So I picked the pin spacing perfectly, and then I was shooting like 3-inch groups at 80 yards without a stabilizer. I'm like, wow, maybe I won't put a stabilizer on this thing. You know, and it's funny that we're talking about it, but I'm going to put one on there. I just haven't figured it out.
It depends on the bow design. Depends on, you know, it depends on a lot of things, really. I mean, but like, I see whitetail hunters not put a stabilizer on their bow. You're climbing up a freaking tree. Okay. Mm-hmm. It's not, there's no negative to weight. The only time I would consider not packing weight is if I'm backpacking in something.
Right.
And what I do a lot of times is I'll take my stabilizer and turn it into a carry handle. So I have a knuckle on it that I fold the stabilizer over. And once you hunt it like that, it's hard not to have that on your bow because it makes it real comfortable to carry your bow. You're always trying to find a way to carry your bow by the handle, by the string, by the just like
yes.
the heart, you know. But making it into a carry handle works pretty well. So, but, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, you don't need it till you need it, you know.
Exactly. The one thing I did find without shooting with a stabilizer, at least for me, I feel like if I'm going to pull a shot, I tend to shoot high when I don't have a stabilizer.
And one of the worst things you can do is heel the bow. One of the things I teach when I'm teaching bow hunting stabilization is the first thing you want to do is fire the shot without your stabilizer on the bow. Figure out what the bow's natural reaction is going to be. And the first thing you have to do is cancel out any aggressive movements, especially if the limb's kicking back at you. You've got to stop that. And that means you got leverage out front. You know, if you're pulling into the shot. Now, these high let off hunting bows, to be honest with you, don't need as much front weight. In fact, you can't hold the front weight up because you don't have any holding weight.
Right. You're not pulling back.
The target guys don't really, you know, the guys shoot year round. They don't really, they don't like the super high let off. I got an 80-pound bow hold, 11 pounds. I don't like that feel. I can't have no leverage. It's like everything just wants to go wank. And when you know, one of the biggest things that I do, and you know, that I've learned over the last 10 years is stabilization. I mean, it just constantly playing with stabilization and how it can help me slow my motion down. And it helps.
Yeah.
It helps
I
a
was just
lot.
excited that I'm like, I figured if I was shooting that well without a stabilizer, look how well I'm going to shoot with a stabilizer. That's what I
Well,
was like. All right, cool.
in a bow like that, that's you're shooting pretty good without a stabilizer. Put something like a like the that Beastinger counter slide on, where it's sitting off the side of the bow and counteracts the weight of the quiver and the sight on the side of the bow. Which you can put
Gotcha.
as much or little weight as you want, but you're using it as kind of cantilever to make that bow naturally sit level. You don't want to force a bow to level either. And
Yeah.
then you slack as much weight on it as you want. You're going someplace, where you got to be careful. You got to sight your bow in with whatever weight you have on it because it can affect the impact point. Yeah, I mean, like I said, I spend a lot of my time shooting because I don't get that much time to hunt. So when I do get the time to hunt, I want to be able to make any shot I can get, and when I'm in a hunting situation, I protect my bow. It always freaks me out, like when I plant my bow, you're mountain goat hunting and you trip and face plant.
Oh, yeah.
It's but and I also choose my equipment very wisely, for that reason. I want equipment that can do that. I want a beefy rest like a Hamsky. I want my black gold sight that can take some abuse. Sometimes I'll have my cables. If I have yokes, I'll serve the yokes, just to protect them, because I planted on a elk hunt 1 year and running on a big bull that was coming into a wallow and cut every strand in my friggin' yoke but one, and I was done.
I always wondered about that, actually. I was like, because the Matthews has yokes also, and it's like, it's pretty,
Well, now I
it's
got Bowtech
not,
with no yokes.
the Bowtech ones kind of stick out. And they're
Yeah, but
like, they go, they don't have them anymore, right? Yeah, they got
well,
rid
they
of them.
do. They still have the Realm series bows, but the new bows, the Result, what's that, what's it called? Yeah, the Result, the Reckonings, they all have that new adjustable cam system. And they don't. It's one of the advantages to it, really, is you don't have a yoke in that scenario. It's a little bit tougher. You don't have to split the yoke out. I used to run floating yokes, so I had a beefier yoke. So I think if the string stretched anywhere, it would stretch at that thinnest point, So,
Right.
but yeah, I mean, it's, you build your setups to take some abuse, but I hate like strapping it to a backpack where I can't see it, control it,
I'm with you, but you know what? More and more, and I'm actually been developing a way to carry it on the backpack. Once I have it all finished, I'll hook you up. But and then the reason why it came about was because I would strap my bow, the one I strap my bow in the backpack, flat on the very back, and I was it was in California, and it was last no the year before in California, and I was climbing, had just freaking blown a stalk on this blacktail. I dropped back down this creek bottom, and I was coming back the other side, and it was one of those situations where you got a 4x4, use both your hands with your feet to climb up this thing. And I'm going up, and I slipped, and the back of the bow, or the bow hit me in the back of the head and knocked me out. I
Wow.
woke up like, yeah, out, like knocked me out. I don't know how long I was out, but it couldn't have been, it was like maybe 30 seconds that I blacked out first, and I was in a freaking pile of poison oak too, which sucked because I got poison oak everywhere. But I was like, there's got to be a fucking better way. This is just sucks. And it's not the first time that I've cracked myself in the back of the head, but I mean, it's the first time I knocked myself out, but it wasn't the first time that I hit myself in the back of the head. Because if you don't have like a very full pack, like you're day hunting or whatever, and the bow's not far back, far away from your head, if you got a thinner pack with not much stuff in there, it's right there. That and it's above your head sometimes, and when you're ducking underneath stuff, it catches and all this other shit. And like, that's why I never like putting it on my back. I was like, I want to keep it in my hand. I could wield it through bushes. I'm not making noise, so on and so forth. But
The only thing
anyway.
worse is trying to figure out how to ride a horse with one.
Oh, yeah. Fuck that. Yeah, I remember lion hunting. And then we put it in a scabbard, and I was like, man, this freaking horse is like squeezing like its body up against the bow, against bushes and all the shit. I'm like, it's gonna break my freaking bow. You know? 1,000-pound animal. He's like, smushing the bow up against a tree and whatever. I'm like, and I can't carry it in my hand. I can't put it on my backpack. Yeah.
One time we went up in Idaho and I got this fancy little bow scabbard and we were riding in the middle of the night and or the morning and poor daylight. And we took this buddy of mine from Oklahoma and we had rented these three horses. And my dad had a really good mare that we'd always rented. And then we had a big buckskin and then we had this little black son of a mother. And my buddy didn't like horses, so I put him on the big buckskin. And this horse was probably not big enough for me. But I straightened him out in the morning and we're riding up the trail and my dad goes up over this little embankment and his horse scoots up over it just fine. Well, mine starts up, it flips over backwards, loses its back legs, thing comes over backwards on me, lands right on top of my legs,
Oh,
goes
God.
under my legs. My ankles are up against river rock and I just locked out and that horse like got pinned up against a willow
Yeah.
where he couldn't move. And my dad got over there and got the cinch off the damn thing, but it bent that Matthew C2 in like a C shape.
Oh, I bet.
And
I bet.
it's like I took it back to camp. I put it on the ground, stomped it back square as close as I could, put a piece of paper up between two arrows and paper tuned it back in, had her going within a couple of hours.
Nice.
People
Oh man.
overanalyze this stuff.
Yeah. You overanalyze everything. That's funny coming from you. You're a tinkerer.
Overanalyze it. I just know what's going on now. I choose my bows wisely. I cannot stand bows that don't tune that. And I deal with a lot of tuning problems, but most bows are pretty decent nowadays, but there's some that are just way easier than others.
Yeah.
This
Have
new
you messed
this
with that new Elite with the result
Well,
with the I'm
it
just
probably
questioning.
works. If I was talking to Nathan the other day, Nathan Brooks, and
I had him on the podcast a couple weeks ago.
he's actually shooting for us this year. Just signed him up. Pretty
Nice.
excited. Pretty excited to have
He's
him.
a good
He's
guy. Good
a
guy.
real star. Yeah, he's one of them guys that's just really good for your company, a good image, and he's a good shot too. You just hope when you get a guy like that's been shooting another brand for every years, he starts your stuff and then he goes off on a tear. That's what you hope,
Yep.
But I think he'll do really well with the product and the bow does tune. That's kind of probably one of his ideas. It's just the same way as using a yoke to affect the limb tips, but it probably won't give you quite as much effect as a yoke, but it'll still give you some tunability.
Right.
I do like this new Bowtech cam system, though. It is slicker than a whistle, man. I mean, you're talking about 5 minute tune jobs. I mean, it's just loosen a screw, turn it over. I was a little like gun shy in the beginning. It's like you think it's too many parts and pieces, but now I was watching them put it together at the Bowtech plant, and I'm like, God, I think it's simple. It's like three pieces.
Nice. I haven't
But
messed with
yeah,
it yet. I usually by
it's.
this time I've gotten to shot all the bows, but I haven't shot
That's
all the
kind of like
bows.
your top hat system on your Matthews, except it's on a screw thread. You just screw the cam left to right. It's really micro adjustable. You don't have to pull the, you don't have to
Right.
space the cam. You just move the cam left to right. But yeah, it's amazing that these engineers can just keep coming up with new stuff. It's like that'd be the hardest thing in the world to try to figure out. What's the next whiz bang thing we're going to try to sell? The archery community. It's like bows
Right.
have been so good for so long, that it's like.
It's kind of
Much.
hard. So I had Mark Hayes from Matthews, the engineer from Matthews on, and he was telling me he's like they're trying to go up right now. The whole bow industry is like they're trying to move in like half percentage improvements. Because they've gotten so efficient with everything, there's not a whole lot of room to go up,
Yeah,
not in big, not in big jumps anyway, like it used to be.
I think it's just smart for companies to build a good bow and keep it in their lineup for 3 or 4 years or 3 years at least. But just start, come up with a game plan to offer different options of colors and different, like Bowtech come out with this new woodland camo. A lot of guys saying that's cool, it's retro, a lot of the young guys like that retro look, and on our Beastinger stabilizer line, I mean, we're doing things like adding dampening material to the inside of the bar, like this new countervail material, and you can definitely feel it. It really is pretty neat stuff. And then offering, instead of camo patterns, doing some flat, green and tan and gray patterns that match the camo on bows. They really look good. I mean, let people kind of customize the look, along with the performance, So,
Have all the reasons to go with a new bow, you know.
yeah, I mean,
Exactly.
it amazes me how so much some people have to have a new bow every year. I mean, that just bow hunt, I mean, of course, I guess, when you do it as long as I have, you kind of lose the. It's just like a hammer to me. It's a tool, and you just want to make sure it's dialed in. I've taken this new Reckoning and try to tweak it every way under the sun, just play with different setups, and the setup I have right now is absolutely pounding. I'm a 33 inch draw and I'm shooting my bow at 37 inch axle to axle right now, and it is pounding, and it shouldn't, it's like it shouldn't, but I'm just able to sit there and shoot inside out baby X's with it on a Vegas spot, and it's just like, this thing pounds. And it might not be the same configuration I shoot it for 3D and target archery. I mean, just the sky's the limit to what you can kind of do with some of these different systems if you get real, fluent with them.
For sure. All right, man. Well, I'm gonna cut us here because I gotta get my butt up to Fish and Game and go pick up some leftover tags for a couple clients before they
Yeah.
sell out. And
I just never, I never, tur I don't know. To me, a javelina is like a turkey. It's like, I like to hunt them, but it's like, it ain't worth the expense to go do it. We're starting to get some turkeys around here, I guess. So maybe I'll have to kill one around here someday. I've never killed a turkey.
really?
Never.
I've never killed one here in Arizona. I've had a couple of, handful of tags, but I've never killed one. Something always goes south for me. The last time I had a tag, I had called in this Tom and he's coming through and he gets to the opening where in between two cedars where I'm about to shoot him. I go to shoot and my gun safety was on. By the time I clicked it off, he was through that opening and I never had another shot at him. That's been my every trip I've done here in Arizona has had some scenario like that. I'm like, I can't, but I've only killed one turkey with a shotgun. The rest have all been with my bow and all been in fall season.
I see lots of them
Stalking a
though.
deer season. Yeah, just come across turkey or whatever. I'm like, all right, I'm gonna go shoot that turkey or shoot him out of a tree stand in back east or,
Yes, I see some pictures of them. It's just not a novelty, and they all look the same. It's not like a deer, Oh, that's a big
Right,
one.
they
That's
all have
got,
character. Exactly, exactly.
there's different character in them, and there's but you don't see that with a turkey. They all look the same,
Yeah, I know. You
But
can count beard length and, whatever,
If I'm in the back east, I think
sprays.
it'd be a different story, it's something you got used to. It's, you don't have to go out of your way to go hunt them out. You can go after work or,
Right. The cool thing about turkey, like you said, if you're in a good spot for turkey, a good state for them, calling them in's fun. And I don't
Yeah,
like to,
for sure.
I people compare it to elk hunting. It's not like elk hunting, but it's like mini elk hunting, it's got a similar feel to it if you run and gun, But I enjoy it, but again, it's not something I go travel out of state often to do. Every once in a while I might go, but
I mean, I had a turkey tag hunting whitetails a couple times, and I was just, I remember one time I was in, where was I, Kentucky? I was in Kentucky.
there's a lot of turkey in Kentucky.
Or
A
north,
lot.
over. Yeah, I don't remember exactly where it was, but I'm sitting in this freaking tree stand. I'm 100 yards from the feeder. I got complete backdrop.
They spotted you.
That son of a gun spotted me, and I was like, how is that possible? And
Yeah,
Yeah, it's like
they're freaking
crazy.
good, man.
I
They're
didn't hardly
good.
move. Then I watched Mike Slinkard with his thing sitting on a chair in the middle of an open shooting. I'm like, oh, these are the retarded turkeys, or that thing really
So with
works.
the hex,
Yeah.
I've used hex some. I've had he sent me this is or when he first came out. He sent me a few suits for me and my cameraman, and we put them to they work. I'll still, in certain situations, I'll still take them out and use
Yeah.
them,
I have one. I dug it out the other day.
Cool. All right, man. Well,
Yeah.
it was a pleasure
Good
talking
talking.
to you. I will talk to you soon.
All right, John. Have a good one.